This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Folks, welcome to the Draft Deeper podcast. I am Maxwell Baumbach, filling in lead hosting duties tonight for Nathan Grubel, who cannot join us tonight, but still give our boy a follow on Twitter, at Draft Deeper. Going to give him a tip of the hat in my column this week as well. But I'm Maxwell Baumbach, leading the show tonight. And with me, as always, we've got Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Maxwell, man, I'm doing great. My camera is acting really weird right now, and I don't know what's going on, so just kind of bear with me. I know this is probably driving Kevin, a little crazy here.
And the thing is, Steven's having these camera problems, and before we started, Steven was saying that he's going to come on here and say, give me the mic every damn segment. You know, they're not drawing up segments for me in crunch time. The whole deal, and then we get on the air, and this happens.
Demanding a trade like Kyrie Irving. Right now, yeah. So man,
what a week in basketball.
Yeah, man, it's been absolutely nuts. You know, Kyrie demanding a trade, was it's funny how NBA fans are. Just real quick, if we can go on a tangent, Maxwell,
yeah,
it's funny how we're like, hey, NBA, do something, make a trade, and then a trade happens and everyone's like, how could this guy do this, what is this team thinking? Just every like, we're getting exactly what we want just so we can be mad at it. And I love it, man,
yeah.
Because I mean, fan is short for fanatic, and we are definitely fanatics, but obviously not here to talk about NBA players.
Yeah, sure.
But they will be soon, man.
Yeah, they will be. Real interesting group. This was a concept. I believe you came up with this one, right, Steven? This was your call?
Yeah, because Nathan, just for people who are wondering what Nathan's up to, he and Corey are actually going to go see Jairus Walker play basketball. And since he was gone, dude, I was just like, hey, Maxwell, do you just want to be sickos without Nathan? So we can talk about some guys that Nathan probably wouldn't have at the top of his list, although he likes a good bit of these guys.
Oh, but for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we typically focus on guys that we're writing about, and maybe a couple key like prospect matchups and stuff like that. But the concept that I had for today was, who are some players that you and I both have outside of our top 60? And kind of focusing on, like, what could they do to get into our top 60? Are they kind of flirting with that? And if they're not in our top 60, well, why not? You know, because, you know, Maxwell, I don't know how you feel about this, but once you get past a certain point, like, the margin of error is super thin, or, like, the margin of talent is super thin. So these guys are going to be fluctuating up and down my board for, like, the rest of the process.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Because like this in, like, I always tell people, like, part of the reason that in my column, I do a thing called the expanding big board, where I start at the beginning of the year with one guy, and I had one guy every single week. And I think it's like, realistically, like, however many weeks we are into the season, that's like realistically how many guys I can have a really strong opinion about. And we're at a point now where it's like more than that. But like down in like the 40 through 100 range, like, that is so in flux. A lot of it comes down to combine performance. And I know some people feel like dirty about that, and like, oh, well, you shouldn't throw out the whole sample and whatever. And I agree. But at the same time, if you look who killed the combine last year, it was Andrew Nembhard and Jalen Williams. And I think more teams wish they maybe would have been even more aggressive about moving those guys up their board after their combine performances. But you look at a guy like Tyrese Martin last year. It was on nobody's radar. Didn't see a single person mention him as a draft guy the entire cycle. Kills Portsmouth, does phenomenal at G League Elite Camp, is it the real deal combine, and then gets drafted by the Hawks. So like this range of the draft is very precarious. So there's a lot of ways guys can move way up and move way down. And we've got a couple mid-major guys in here too. And I think what we started to notice the last couple of years is those guys always rise late. Like last year, Vince Williams was in like the 90s by ESPN's board, like deep into the cycle, like until the season was over. And I think a lot of these teams, they have scouts going out, and a lot of them just kind of miss these mid-major guys. They're not as on the radar, and then they catch up on the film and they rise up or they do up these post-draft events or workouts or what have you. So those are the kind of guys that we're focusing on today. Really excited. So let's just get right into it. So the first guy that I had is like the definition of a guy who I think is in an extremely precarious position, which is Damoy Hodge. Yeah. He is a graduate player. He's currently at Missouri. So he spent 2 years at State College of Florida, transferred up to Cleveland State, did a really great job there, was a part of just that initial program building that was going on there. And then transferred over to Missouri with Dennis Gates. When Dennis Gates got the Missouri job, he took Damoy Hodge with him, and he's looked great there. Damoy Hodge, for the unfamiliar, 6'4" guard. He is scoring 14.2 points per game, 3.9 rebounds per game, only 1.8 assists per game, but only 0.7 turnovers. A lot of their offense runs through Kobe Brown, who sort of operates as like a point forward for them, but kind of like out of the elbow and stuff like that. His shooting splits for the year, he's 47.1% from the field, 38.1% from three on 7 attempts per game, and he's a 72% free throw shooter. And the defense is really where he butters his bread. 2.3 steals per game, 0.6 blocks per game. Really strong numbers for a guard. So with Damoy, the reason that he is outside of my lottery is I think he's in a tough spot for a couple of reasons. The first is that he is a graduate player, and it's going to be really tough for anybody who's a graduate player to like get drafted. Like, we just haven't seen it happen yet. We're in like year two, basically of guys having this much eligibility.
And real quick, you said outside your lottery, right? Like,
outside my top 60. That's my
fault. There we go. No, dude, you're good.
Yeah.
Just making sure you didn't move him like while you were talking.
While we were talking, I moved him to 15. I like him better than guys like Grady Dick. No. Okay. So Damoy Hodge has had this like real, just kind of steady ascent. I think part of it is, so he's older. He is not getting to run the offense like a traditional point guard would get to, which is probably what you want him to do at the next level. Like, he's probably gonna have to play point guard because I don't see him guarding twos just based on his frame. He's like 180 pounds. And then the other issue with Damoy Hodge is that he's not like a great athlete. Like, he's not super bursty at the rim. He doesn't get off the floor that well. Like, he gets blocks, but it's a lot of just like knowing where to be and having good sense and awareness as a defender. And I don't think it hurts that he plays for like one of the smartest coaches in the country and Dennis Gates. Like, you were being coached to like the highest level possible at all times with him. But what I do like about him is he's a real deal shooter. He can hit some super deep threes. So I do buy the shot. It's really clean. And he shows some cleverness with his passing. Like, even though the assist numbers aren't crazy, I think he knows what he's doing. He doesn't get bothered by closeouts, and he can get off the shot quick. So I think, like, if you buy the defense, which I do, I think he could really do a number guarding point guards at the next level, and you buy the shot, which I do, like, there's something there. It's going to come down to opportunity, like it will for a lot of people in that range, but I don't know. Like, I feel like to move up, he's just got to stay nuclear. Missouri's got to really go on a run. Like, he just has to really increase his visibility, because in the SEC right now, Missouri is not a standout team. It looked like they might be, and they've had a couple of rough losses since their hot start and their Kentucky win, which in hindsight doesn't mean as much as it did at the time, and whatever. But what are your thoughts on Damoy Hodge?
Well, yeah, so I just want to throw out a couple of real quick numbers that I found when I was looking on Synergy, right? 92nd percentile operating in the half court for a guard. That's fantastic. 86th percentile in transition. He's in the 91st percentile on spot ups, 88th percentile at the rim, a 70th percentile on catch and shoot, and both guarded and unguarded. So, like you said, like, closeouts don't really bother him that much. 2.4 steal or block percentage, excuse me, which is fantastic for a guard, really, and 4.7 percent steals percentage. Only two games out of the 22 that he's played without a steal. And like you mentioned, he's 38% from deep with a couple of bad games. Like, a couple of kind of really bad games.
That's the thing that scares me too, is like his bad game film, like offensively, if he's not feeling it, like, just not offering you a whole lot out there. And that's at the college level. Like, that gets scary when you think about it at the next level.
Exactly. Right. And so if you look at like just defensive first players, right? Like, we have Matisse Thybulle is like everyone's kind of go to whenever they talk about like really good defender. If he could only get a shot, you know, same thing with Isaac Okoro at Cleveland, right? So we have current examples of guys who fantastic defenders, fantastic athletes. Damoyo Hodge, like you mentioned, I think he's a solid athlete, right? But I don't think that he's like anything particularly to write home about, right? He's decent at finding an opening. I really like his off ball, like cutting and relocations for shots. Like all of that looks great.
Yeah, knows where to go.
But the majority of the shots do come from deep. You know, he is averaging, what, 10.5 shots per game. About seven of those are coming from distance, right? So not a lot of well-balanced shooting in his diet right now. And he's not really asked to move with the ball in his hand a bunch, more of an off guard like you had stated. So if I got a guy who is – he might be 6'4", like do you feel confident in saying that he's a real 6'4", Maxwell?
I don't feel confident in saying like most guys their listed height.
Yeah.
I don't think he's like way under. Like there's some guys they look at, I'm like, no, not even close. I don't think he's probably not 6'4", but I don't think he's like 6'1.5" either.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I think for me, like when I watch him, like he feels every bit of it, but I just want to get your take because I do kind of fell with like, okay, the guy, he's probably gonna be listed taller than what he actually is. I'm a big believer in the weight being what it is because you watch him play, he's a little bit slender.
Moved kind of easily.
Yeah, and I think that his size and strength combination is going to be his big weakness coming up to the next level, right? So if I got a guy who has bad games, but also has like good games and he's not going to have the ball in his hand, then we're kind of looking at like a smaller off-ball creator shooter with a jumbo initiator on his team, and the defense is there. So like what you said, that that's where he butters his bread. I think that he might be able to find his way into the league within time, but Maxwell, do you like, obviously neither one of us have him in our top 60. I feel confident in like this being a, you know, two-way contract, you know, priority undrafted.
Yeah. Or like free agent type 10. Player. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I just think it's not something like you don't see a lot of like point guards get drafted in general. And I think, I don't know, like it's tough for guards. And we're going to talk about another one later, but like, if you aren't like really good with your handle or really creative as a passer, like you have to be a lockdown defender and you have to really be able to shoot. And even then, if you're Damoyo Hodge, it's like, okay, well, like at the next level, like, are you anything special athletically? Okay. Well, if you're undersized and that's an issue, then like, that's going to take time to fix. And then by the time you fix that, you're like 25. And then is the team like interested in you, or do they want a guy that's like 23 that they can roll the dice on, or 22? Like it's so hard to make it in the NBA.
But he's a smart guy, right? Like when you watch him, he analyzes the game really well. So, And I'm a kind of a believer in the work ethic based on everything that I've read and that I've watched of him too. Right. So being able to constantly play up to that next level, he has that upward trajectory. Right. So the work ethic's there, the mind, like the processing is there. I think there's a path for him to be in the NBA. But again, like with everybody else, especially at that guard spot, like where am I prioritizing relative to his positional peers?
Right. And it's that. And then it's the whole like fit thing. Like he needs the right fit. And that's true for like most guys, guys, when you get past like 40, like it really gets a lot more fit dependent.
I was going to say like 20.
Yeah. Like, for real though. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. And like, I think the point about the scalability is a good one though. Right. Cause he was at Cleveland State last year and his numbers are like pretty identical. Like he's actually rebounding a little bit better. The assists are up. The turnovers are down. Like, the 3-point percentage is up on higher volume. And that's the thing too. He shot better every year on higher volume, which is always like an indicator that I really like to see in players. So like, it does feel like he's just kept getting better. And to your point, like one thing I always talk about is like, will this guy embarrass himself playing at the next level? And like, I don't know that Damoyo Hodge can like, I don't know that he can like play in an NBA game and be good, but like, I do think the fact that he won't make a coach rip their hair out is something that he has working in his favor. Like that, it matters a lot. Like just in terms of like who a coach wants to have in a practice facility and like being a part of, you know, their camp and things like that. So Yeah, he's got a shot. I just, the age and like the frame are the two things. Yeah. Like the older you are, the more I care about your frame. And like sure. That's one of the things holding Hodge back.
Even though the older you get, the easier it is to put on weight. So you
know, yeah,
just bad,
yeah,
bad weight though, right? You want to put on good weight.
Yeah.
Right on.
For sure.
All right. So, yeah, next.
Do you want to get to one of your guys?
Yeah. Let's hop into my first candidate. And a guy who's gotten a little bit of conversation, I would say, in the draft space. I know that, you know, a friend of ours, Mark Schindler, wrote a piece about him and is looking to, and has been putting his name out in the space as well. But Bryce Hopkins, you know, player out of Providence. I believe that he is, if I can see, yeah, about 6'7", 220 pounds. Playing out of Providence, was originally a member of Kentucky, transferred out, probably wasn't happy with the depth that they had and where he was in the pecking order. But Providence is a real team this year, man.
Yeah,
and
he made a real good call.
He made a really good call. He did, man. And the role that he has on this team, he is by and large a focal point. So I want to point out that he is in the 69th percentile in the half court, which, you know, for his first opportunity playing like a real meaningful role in D1 basketball.
Yeah,
that's huge. 94th percentile on post-ups, and we'll talk about that. That's kind of like where he resides a little bit. On only 13 possessions, he is in the 80th percentile as the pick-and-roll ball handler, so that's kind of cool. Maybe there's something to that. He's in the 70th percentile in putbacks, 64th percentile at the rim. Most of his other, you know, advanced analytics and stuff like that, right at his average, which is really weird because when you watch him, you would think that some of these other things would pop. His free throw rate's actually pretty good. He's only had one game so far without an assist. I think that that's pretty impressive. In 9 out of 23 games, he's been without double-digit rebounding. So, I mean, by and large, he crashes the glass a lot as well. One of the things that kind of troubles me a little bit is that most of his shots look like tough shots. He doesn't, and I don't know if that's maybe a function of the system of Providence for the position that he plays, where it looks like the perimeter is more open than for their front court. He plays the four right now, kind of at an undersized four, but he's very strong. And I think that that really helps him out a lot when we're looking at him in those post-up opportunities. He carves out nice rebounding lanes as well. Capable to back down most players that he's lined up against. Has solid touch around the basket, and he really works in kind of that mid-post game really well too. He's not going to be the best mid-post operator out of the group that we're talking about, but he's actually pretty good. The shooting's inconsistent though, right? And so if we're talking about a 3-4 probably at the next level, ideally, that shooting percentage has to climb up. Right now it's in the low 30s. He's a decent ball mover. We talked about that a little bit. And I think that he can play more conventional sets than what Providence is running right now. So I think that that kind of, that doesn't really do him any favors on film, Maxwell. What have you thought about him so far this year?
Yeah, he confuses me a little bit. Like, he's just one of those guys that I don't quite feel like I have a grasp on how to pin him down. Yeah. And it's become one of those things that we're like, I really enjoy watching him play. And I like Devin Carter on their team a lot too.
So I like Devin Carter too.
Yeah. Providence has slowly become a team that I find myself like putting on my weekly schedule more and more, just because I want to figure this guy out. Like, he's really interesting to me. I slept on him quite a bit at the beginning of the season. I watched him once earlier in the year and was just like a little turned off by a few things. Like, the positional size isn't great, like at 6'6", but to your point, he is strong. Like,
yeah,
he is NBA strong. He's going to be able to figure a lot of those things out at the next level. I'm not crazy about the defense. Like, he's not, he's very ball watchy off the ball. Like, feet aren't the best, doesn't always do the best handling himself in space, but he's not terrible. Like, it's just, it's frustrating because he didn't have big defensive metrics last year in a smaller role. No. Now this year, like, he's in a bigger role. So like, I just really don't know what to make of him as a defender. But I like the offensive stuff a lot. He is very strong, which like helps him get to his spots a lot. But he's also like kind of a hooper. Like, he's got some moves to get to his spots. He's got counters upon counters. He's got a nice spin move. Like, he has a bit of a bag. Like, there's a real kind of potent like face up game where he can get his own when he needs to. And your point, like, a lot of the shots end up being tough, but it's like, I feel like he does a decent job of at least generating himself shots, which a lot of guys can't do. I like his passing vision. I think his passing vision's a little bit better than the numbers probably say. Like, it's like, it's 2.4 assists per game, but like the assist or turnover isn't great. And yeah. I like, he's not like in a terrible situation, but I overall believe in his passing feel and how he sees the game. Like, I think he's a smart player. He's local. Like, he's from not far from me. The word on him was always kind of positive locally. Like, I don't know a ton about him. I haven't like dug around and asked, you know, interrogated people about him, but sure. I always heard really good things when he was at Fenwick High School. The other issue with him is just like the shot. Like, he doesn't take a ton of threes.
No.
So he's taking two a game. He's hitting 32.6%. On synergy, like, catch and shoots grayed out like basically exactly where his percentages are. I want to say it was like,
yeah,
right around 32% on catch and shoots. I'm pulling that up right now. Okay, it's 29.8. So yeah, that's where it gets tricky, is like, so we don't really know what to make of him as a defender. He doesn't quite have NBA size for a four, and he doesn't have an outside shot. But you watch the games and it's like, man, this guy's really good.
He's a difference maker.
He is. And Providence is winning. So like, I don't quite, sorry, my daughter's making Chewbacca noises in the background. And she's coming through it all. But yeah, it's one of those things where I wonder what the best move for him is, because if he stays in college, like, he has all the studio space you could want, and he's doing it on a winning team. Like, he's making a difference. But it's also one of those things where it's like, should he just go to the NBA? Should he just like go there and like figure it out there, like get in a better strength and conditioning program, get moving, work with the shooting coaches there? Like, is that the best platform? It might be. Like, I wouldn't, I don't know. It's weird whenever a guy is scoring like 18 points per, like 16 points per game and on a winning team and they go back. So.
Yeah. And one thing that you touched on, I wrote that he has a pretty decent positional handle. And I think that that kind of helps him get to those moves, you know, those little combo dribbles operating off the block, to where he can, you know, dribble, kind of hit a quick cross and then into a little mid-post step back. And like you touched on, he works himself into those spots, and you can just tell that he's comfortable and confident whenever he gets those opportunities. He doesn't really ever look phased there. My biggest thing is, one, is an NBA team going to look to add a player like that within the top 60 of their board, right? Where kind of that bully ball style, but also undersized, coupling the bully ball style with his frame. The outside shot's not there. The passing is okay, but it's not necessarily anything to write home about. But just a player that I feel like, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the players outside our top 60 that might have the opportunity to come back in, to being a draftable guy, I feel like Bryce Hopkins is a player worth mentioning, because he's within that range. And I know a lot of people like him but don't love him, or they love him but they don't have him in the top 60, you know, to kind of spin it to how we typically love our, you know, 112th prospects on our boards, Maxwell, but still keep him outside our top 60. I wanted to focus on him because he's a player that at one point, you know, I wrote about, you know, Keontae Johnson out of Kansas State lately. And I was like, you know, what's the difference between these two guys? Because they both operate similarly, or, you know, at a similar position. But after the film dive on both of them, they're just like two totally different players, where Keontae, trust that. You trust the outside shot. You trust the passing. You trust the athleticism. And the defense, I would say, is even a step ahead too. Whereas
for Bryce, sure,
it looks like he's a little slower footed than Keontae. So that kind of troubles me.
Yeah, Keontae, I think, is just like a better athlete as a whole. Like, I feel like he's got like a little more surprise burst. He gets off the floor a little bit better. Like, I think he's just got a few athletic advantages there.
Yeah.
But I do think, to your point, like we were talking earlier about like what can guys do to improve their stock, and like, don't you think if Bryce just shoots, don't you think if he gets in, we're like kind of, I mean, running out of time from a game standpoint, but like, do you think if he finds a way to like end the year on like 36% from three?
I think it's a shot.
Would you feel better about it? Like,
I would feel better, yeah, because I mean, we're talking about a guy who has like NBA strength, I would say. You know, like, you don't worry about him holding up, you know,
not a bit,
positionally, if he's like scaling up or down, right? But the shot's really got to be the thing that comes around for him. And we always, I feel like, you know, that's the one thing that people trap themselves in all the time, is that if they only get the jump shot right, and We see too many horror stories. And again, I feel like the four Maxwell in this year's draft is incredibly deep this season. You know, like the power wing or the fours that we're looking at this year, I feel like he's just going to kind of fall victim to the depth of that position within this draft class.
So with Bryce, then, I guess my next question would be, how do we feel about the shot? Because like, it's obviously like going to come down for that for him, like it will for a lot of people. Last year, he only took half a free throw a game. This year, he gets slammed a ton because he's so physical. Yep. He takes 6.1 a game, 75%. Hits tough ones in the mid-range. Like, where do you buy his shot, like, relative to his peers? Like, do you feel better about him figuring out that three, or do you think it's, like, going to be kind of a battle?
Well, I mean, if I could just look at some guys who I think play similar, you know, like, Maxence Prosper out of Marquette, I believe mm-hmm. his shot a little bit better. If I'm looking at, let's see here, Keontae Johnson, we already talked about him. Keontae's been a reliable three-point shooter for a long time. Josiah Jordan mm-hmm. James has been a reliable three-point shooter.
And has like a mid-range, like the same thing, like nice mid-range game.
Yeah, so I mean, those are kind of guys that I have in a similar range positionally within my board outside of my top 60. Mm-hmm. And then you got to consider that guys like, you know, Coleman Hawkins are probably going to get taken ahead of him too. Obi Clintman, I like his long-term shooting prospects a little bit better as well. So Mark Mitchell is even showing some interesting shooting potential out of his.
I really like Mark Mitchell's game. I really like his game. He just fills the gap so well.
Yeah, and he's playing out of position for Duke right now, and mm-hmm. he's doing a decent job of it, right? So if I'm looking at all of these guys who I kind of have in that like 61 to 100 range, I would say that I feel less. He's probably one of the guys that I feel the least confident in mm-hmm. positionally in terms of turning into a shooter, which doesn't really help him out at all. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to another guy with like a bit of a jump shot question. I kind of have a bit of a theme with my first two guys, I guess. So this guy's shooting a little bit better on the year, but similarly a low volume guy. We're going to talk about Kobe Johnson at USC, mm-hmm. the younger brother of Jalen Johnson. Kobe Johnson is a 6'5 sophomore. He is scoring 8.1 points per game, 4.9 rebounds, 2.9 assists to 1.6 turnovers. So really good decision maker at 6'5". 2.2 mm-hmm. assists per game, or I'm sorry, 2.2 steals per game and half a block per game. 46.8% from the field, 37% from three, and 86.7% from the free throw line. I really feel like Kobe Johnson's going back to school. And I'm not like a big pre-draft guy of the concept of like, oh yeah, just take a guy early. Like I don't love to do that. Like I feel like, I don't know. It's a gamble, and I'm generally not a gambling man with second round picks. But
isn't it crazy how that like concept was like so in vogue last season, and like you don't really hear anything about it anymore?
Yeah, I feel like this year there just like aren't a lot of guys for it. But I feel like last year there was like a million freshmen that were like had like first round pick buzz to a degree, yep. and they all just like stayed in the draft. So teams ended up doing it that like. I don't know. I don't want to say they didn't want to do it, but it was just like, well, like the Lakers are picking. They're like, hey, Max Christie's pretty interesting. Let's just take him. Yeah. Like there was a lot of picks like that, or like Caleb Houston was one. Like there were a lot of guys that I think kind of ended up getting pre-drafted just because they stayed in. But I don't know how crazy about it teams are. That'd be interesting to like poke around and find out about. But I really like Kobe Johnson. I think he's a monster, monster, monster defender. Like I think he's one of the best wing defenders and college hoops. His feet and length are absurd. Does a really great job rotating. Like that guy moves like crazy and he stays so balanced. His balance is impeccable. Like I've yet to see a play where like he closes out with steam and the guy like catches him off balance and beats him. It doesn't happen. It's uncanny. Really special in that respect. But I also, and like he racks up steals like without gambling a ton. Like he knows when he can cheat and like when he can get away with yep. it, but he's not a guy who's like, I gotta get my numbers, like kind of dart a passing lane and like accidentally yep. give up a layup, or like I'm gonna try to play behind a guy to be clever and accidentally really give smart. Up a layup. doesn't do any of that. Like it's a very composed game for a high production defender. And I like the offense. Like the thing that's killing him is the volume is low. Like he, right. Yeah. Like he's scoring 8 points per game. He takes 2 threes per game. So like, that's probably the right amount of threes given his role. He's taking like under 6 shots per game, but also teams don't tend to draft guys that are taking under 6 shots per game, especially when they're not like highly touted one and done freshmen in a peculiar situation. Like usually sophomores don't get that kind of opportunity. But I do like the offense a lot. Like I really buy him as a passer. Takes good angles at the rim, can really like split seams with bounce passes, has good pocket passes. He knows where to fill gaps on the perimeter off the ball. Like he has a nose for the glass. Like there's just all these little things I love about him. And I think he just needs to like prove he can score a little bit more. And I don't know how much of an opportunity he's going to get to do that, but, and it's been like slower over the last couple months. Like he went on this run, like, right before the holidays. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be one of these guys that we look back at. And we're like, oh man, that's when Kobe took off. And like scoring 9.6 points per game since the turn of the year. Like, and the efficiency is great. The efficiency is phenomenal. Like since the turn of the year, 46% from the field, 43.8% from three, 89% from the free throw line. I buy the shot. I buy the defense. Shots I think he's there. A good athlete. Yeah. So like I'm into him, but guys that score 8 points a game generally still get drafted. So talk to me about Kobe Johnson. Are you like as into him as I am, or are you like you're out to lunch putting a guy in this range when that's what they're doing?
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think Derek Lively is probably going to get drafted, and I don't know if he's averaging 8 points a game, right?
Oh no, so, he's averaging like four. Yeah,
yeah. There we go. But in all seriousness, man, like I didn't really watch. I mean, obviously, I watched Kobe Johnson, you know, like we share our boards all the time. And we're just like, oh, dude, did you see my 618th ranked prospect? And
how- yeah, they really have a shot. There's a path for them.
Yeah, like I really think he's got a chance to play in Europe next year. but Kobe is one of these guys that, you know, probably me being an East Coaster and him being in a West Coast team, I haven't really seen him play a lot. So I'm glad that when we decided, you know, the theme of the show, that you had mentioned him because his name actually came up whenever I was interviewing Brandon Pajemski. Both of these guys played together in AAU ball, right? And so,
you know, by Brandon's- the way, like what like a nasty wing pair to have to just play as a high schooler. Like I know they're playing like other elite high schools, but still like, geez,
yeah,
not fun to play two level, like that nasty of a defender, that nasty of a shooter, both of them can pass.
Yeah.
That's a rough way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, totally not a good time if you're not on that team, right? But, you know, it's just funny because Brandon has played with several, like, siblings of brothers, and, like, he's kind of kept that theme going at Santa Clara. But Kobe, man, like, he's 59th percentile overall on offense, 67th at the rim, 65th on guarded catch and shoots, on unguarded if my alliteration wasn't that great there. 4.6 steals percentage, 2% block percentage. He's shooting at almost 36% from deep, which you touched on, and almost 51% on his two-pointers. His free throw rate's actually pretty decent, too, considering the volume of shooting that he's on at 42.9. And when I was watching him, you know, I kind of texted you and was like, is he just like Kyle Kuzma, just maybe a little bit smaller?
Yeah.
Because when I'm watching...
I like that comp, though. Like, you said that, and I was like, what is he? And then I was like, No, I get it.
I mean, they both wear the number zero, so that kind of skewed my thought there. But I mean, if you look at how they play the game, just like the sweet jump shooting, I love both of their jump shots. Both willing passers, both have good vision. I like them both in the open court. And his defense can be a little bit of the Ole variety where he can kind of let guys get past him. But you can see whenever he's got position and he's really assertive on defense that there are things there to build upon, right? Where the block and steal percentage for his height at his position, I think, is actually pretty good. And just considering how young this guy is, like, I'll be honest with you, Maxwell, I don't have him in my top 100. But I do think that going back and watching him, I'm probably going to move him up from where I had him just because of, you know, you can only watch so much film, right? But he was a guy that I grew more intrigued with the more film I watch. And there's definitely a pathway, I think, for him to get into that range. But the great news for Kobe Johnson, in my opinion, is that he doesn't have to be there this year. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
no. Mm-hmm.
There's certainly ways that he can improve himself and get into that range. I think he's having a heck of a year right now at USC, though.
So here's a question for you, and it's kind of an odd one.
Sure.
So Matisse Thybulle is a sophomore at Washington.
Yeah.
Had a steal percentage of 3.9 and a block percentage of 2.2.
Yeah.
So lower steal rate than Kobe Johnson by like quite a bit, and just like a slightly higher block rate. And I feel better about Kobe Johnson's jump shot, like by a pretty considerable margin than Matisse is. Yeah. And Matisse, like, he's not great, but he's playing NBA rotation minutes on a playoff team. So like, why am I not drafting Kobe Johnson if he comes in this year? I feel like this is like the one guy I really like need somebody to like talk me off the ledge about. Cause I think I'd draft him. Like if I'm being real, like if I'm redoing my board right now, I think Kobe Johnson's in there.
I don't think that he's like going, like if I can just some conjecture.
Matisse got
here,
quite a bit better defensively those last 2 years too.
He did.
Like,
and
that's,
and then
worth noting
contextually too, like two completely different styles of defense to compared
playing
to
the 2-3 zone at Washington.
Yeah. So I don't feel like Kobe Johnson is going to be like a dude that declares this year. Like that's just like my initial gut reaction based on the entire college overtime international G League scene. I just don't think that he's going to be in there. So that's kind of like the biggest part that I have baked into there. But if he is coming in, like I feel really good about my top 100 and where I have guys right now. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be vulnerable. I'll share my stupid opinions that everybody loves. Right. From 90 to 100 right now, I have Jalen Pickett, Damoy Hodge, Kobe Bufkin, who's going to get moved up. This is just from my last board. Kobe Brown, Jaden Bradley, Alex Fudge, who could probably maybe fall out. I don't know. KJ Simpson, Will Richard, Chris Livingston, Trey White, and Matthew Cleveland. Like all names.
Yeah,
that
I've got
like
four, maybe five of those guys. I feel like I'd gun to my head, probably take them this year out of Kobe.
Yeah, and so, and then if you saw the rest of my board, like really sitting down and looking at the names, I'm like, who can I squeeze in here and who can I squeeze out? Like, I got like maybe five or six names that I could probably talk myself down, but then I'm looking through my next 10 players, you know, 101 to 110. I think Kobe might be able to contend in that range, but I don't know, man. Like,
and that's a lot of guys, it's a lot of good basketball players out there.
That's a far cry from, you know, top 58 this year, right? With the two forfeited.
Yeah.
With the two
forfeited. Which, knock that off. Just give the team the pick. Let's draft 60 guys. And I know people are like, oh, well, a lot of guys want to go undrafted anyway. I don't care. There are two guys that would like to be drafted. I'm sure they would hear their name called. Let's keep
the picks. Why are we punishing the players for a mistake that the team did? I hate that. I hate that.
Let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of that.
Please do. But yeah, man. So I just looking at the names that I have ahead of him, I just have a really hard time justifying sliding them in there. And then even into the draft range, I'm just like, I don't know.
So I think where you are on Kobe Johnson is kind of like where I'm at with your next guy. So let's get into him.
Yeah. And you heard me mention that guy's name in my kind of like 92-100, but there's a lot that I like about him, man. And, you know, shout out to Metcalf. I do really like guys outside my top 58 here. But KJ Simpson out of Colorado, and points per possession overall on offense, he grades out on average at 0.863. You put in his assist, that jumps up to 1.113. So, like, obviously he's going to be a good facilitator. 73rd percentile, which ranks out as very good as a pick-and-roll ball handler. Same thing in isolation. Off screens, he's in the 96th percentile, albeit on 13 possessions. He's got a really good runner as well. He's really going to create for himself offensively more so than create off of a pass from someone else. But I really think that that's kind of an indication of the team that he's playing on right now at Colorado, to put it nicely. Crazy stupid assist percentage at 25.8, 2.7 steals percentage. He's an 80% free throw shooter, which I want to touch on that because he's only a 30% three-point shooter. He's 11 of his 23 games have had four or more assists. He's got 10 games with multi-steal games. And Maxwell, this is the point of the conversation here that I want to incorporate a new stat that I'm calling blunks, right? Mm-hmm. And this is in the same vein as stocks, you know, with the steals and blocks. Blunks are a combination of blocks and dunks. And I know that a lot of people look at these two stats as indications of athleticism. So I'm going to combine these two things. He has 10 blunks on the year. So Maxwell, when I'm looking at him, he can make a lot of really beautiful feeds out of the pick and roll. He's not afraid to attack the rim despite being listed at 6'2", 175 pounds. He moves away, or he moves very well away from the ball. Surprisingly good offensive rebounder, like very competitive, same mold as like what we see from Kobe Bufkin. Very similar in that aspect. Shot doesn't look busted, but there's inconsistency there. Maxwell, if I could, you know, pick your brain for a second. The base looks a little bit skinny to me whenever I see him shoot. So I think that, you know, not having a stable enough platform, and sometimes he even off of a skinny base, like moves off of it. So even more instability into that jump shot. So I think that there's a path that the shot can get there.
I do too. And I think that's like part of the reason the free throw shooting is good, right? Is it like he can kind of take his time with his base? Because one of the things I put in my notes is actually very similar, which is that stroke is clean at the top. Which, like, there's a reason I put at the top. Like, the base is not always there. But I think KJ Simpson's a really interesting player. I'm with you on, like, the passing stuff, especially. Like, I think he's, and just, like, as a driver, too. Like, he sees the floor really nicely. And another guy where, like, the like, assist turnover, I don't want to say, like, throw it out, because Colorado's not, like, the worst team in the world. But
no.
I think he's a better, like, playmaker than, like, the basic numbers say they are.
He's got DeSilva on that team, who is another, like,
I like DeSilva. Yeah,
he's a good college player, you know.
So with Simpson, I like his creativity a lot. Like, I think he has a very well developed, like, attacking and driving game. Lot of counters, some real creativity. He's good with his footwork. I like the handle. Takes interesting angles at the rim to protect the ball, even though he's not like the most crazy vertical athlete or anything like that. So I feel like I have a pretty solid belief in him. I just, like, don't see him as a draft guy for this year. And I think part of it is that he is 6'2". And like I mentioned earlier, like, it is just tough for guards. Like, there are so many basketball players in the world that are 6'4" and under that. Like, if that's the height you are, like, you've got to really have your stuff together if you're coming into the NBA. I think he's a better defender, just real quick, than the numbers indicate. Like, I feel like every time I watch him, I'm a little surprised by how well he covers ground. And I feel like he does better in rotations than most 6'2 guys do, as far as just, like, getting where he needs to be. And I like his instincts as well.
So for me, just real quick, defensively, I've kind of noticed that he gets happy feet a lot whenever he's on the perimeter on his man. Like, he bites on jab steps pretty easily. And, you know, if I'm scouting him and I'm telling my ball handler, like, dude, just pump fake, he'll go for it. Just pump fake, and he's going to bite on it. But I do, like you mentioned, the rotation stuff I think is there, and the stuff that he does need to clean up, I feel like it's pretty, just tell your guy not to jump, you know what I mean? Or tell him, just, you know, force the guy to decide, like, don't play the middle. Don't be so susceptible to the bevy of moves that the guy across from you can get you with.
Yeah. So, I think where I struggle with him is that he's 6'2", so there's just a lot of guys that size that I think are more ready. The shot concerns me, and I think part of the thing with the shot, too, is, like, we mentioned the base, but he also, like, has directional misses a lot where it's not just short or long. Like, in the games that I saw, and maybe it's just, like, I've not, like, admittedly watched a ton of Colorado.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. I Nikkei Clifford's going to, like, come to my house. And no, I like Nikkei Clifford, by the way.
Yeah.
Real nice. Another just real nice college player. He misses to the left a lot. Like, I've probably only seen three or four Colorado games, but, like, I was like, oh, there's, like, another miss to the left from KJ Simpson. So you're taking a guy who is undersized, not just from, like, a height standpoint, but, like, weight too, like, at 175 or whatever he's listed at. he is not a reliable jump shooter. And even off the catch, like off the catch, he is at 26.7% from synergy. So it's not even like, you just pair him next to a bigger initiator. He can catch and shoot kind of thing. And then
he's a better shooter.
He's gonna get mismatch hunted.
Yeah, he's a better shooter off of dribble jumpers than he is off of a clean catch and shoot.
Yep. So I just think like the complementary aspect of his game is like a little bit difficult from that standpoint. And then I think that just the athleticism, the body, the fact that like bigger guys are going to puff through him, the happy feet on the ball. Like there's just too much that's not there. But I do think he's just another one of those guys where you watch him and it's like, I think he's better than these numbers say he is. Like, I think there's a real path for him. I think he probably is going to have to be a 4-year guy just because of how hard it is for guards now. I think he's interesting. I just can't get there with him this year.
Yeah. And I'm in the same way. Like, he piques my interest. Like, you'll watch his games and you're just like, okay, like he is clearly the best guy on his team. And then you'll be watching another game and you'll see the score, you know, the ticker on the bottom. You'd be like, holy crap, KJ Simpson just dropped like 26 points in his game, you know, and had like three or four assists. You're like you'll look at the numbers that he puts up in a game. And you're like, holy crap. Like, why am I not paying more attention to this guy? And then you do your due diligence in both film and the analytics. And it kind of shows you that, yes, he is like a very talented collegiate guard, but there are some glaring holes and concerns in his game, which, again, the things that we're talking about, though, can be cleaned up to help improve his draft stock. But just a player that, because of the very explosive outings that this young man can put up on a, you know, every couple week basis, is just like, I wanted to give him a little bit more focus and shine on this week.
For sure. And I think like this next guy's like one of my guys where like, he's just straight
I'm
up one
so
of my
glad
guys.
You
like, he's a guy,
him,
he's
yeah.
a guy I like a lot. Ben Shepherd. So Ben Shepherd is a senior at Belmont. He is 6'6", 6'7". Was a no stone unturned guy for me over the summer. Like one of the guys I covered. And I just like fell in love with his game during that series. Like I liked him a lot. Like I thought, I don't think he's a better prospect than Will Richard per se, but like I thought he was the better player for Belmont last year. And like I watched a ton of Belmont over the summer. So like Ben Shepherd, like some of the stuff I'm going to get into with him is going to sound really nitpicky, but it's just because I've watched a lot of him compared to most prospects in his range. I just love his game. I interviewed him for the series. He gets it. Like just on a personal level, he was very self-aware when I spoke with him. He was like, hey, this is the stuff I need to work on. This is what I'm doing to get better at it. But he also like really knows what he does well. And he's really confident in himself. Like I came away from the conversation I had with him, liking him as a human being a lot, liking his mentality a lot. And like that dude, when he goes into interviews, he's going to know how to handle his business. And he's improved so much of the things he needed to work on that it's like, I believe every word that he told me over the phone. Like there's a lot of guys like you talk to him and it's like, I just kind of have to believe it, I guess. Yep. And then like, you don't know if they're going to do what they say they're going to do. And Ben did. He filled out his frame. He got a lot bigger this year. But let's just start nuts and bolts. Who is Ben Shepherd? Cause a lot of people are not watching Belmont all the time. So he is a senior wing. He's scoring 19.4 points per game. 48.1% from the field, 41.5% from three on 6.4 threes per game, 65.4% free throw shooter. He's like 80 some percent on free throws after the start of the year. I think he went through like a mental thing with free throws early in the year where like
it's kind of weirdly been a bad free throw shooter like
his whole career. Yeah. And but he started the year like 40% on free throws and was there like until the new year. Now he's making like 80% of them. So I'm hoping it's just like behind him.
Yeah.
5.2 rebounds per game, 3.1 assists to 2.1 turnovers. That's been a huge development area. We'll get to that. 1.4 steals, 0.2 blocks. So the big thing with Ben Shepherd is the shooting. He was not a shooter going into college, and he knew that like that was the thing he needed to work on to get on the court. He has improved his volume and percentage every year. Yep. So he came into college shooting 1.3 threes per game. He's now up to 6.4. Was a 27.9% three-point shooter, now up to 41.5. And he is a real deal shooter. Like he is very good off of movement, hits a lot of threes, coming off screens, coming off handoffs. He is shooting a ton of pull-up threes. He's taken like a bunch of threes off the dribble this year. pulling up those numbers right now. 32 threes off the dribble. He's hit 16 of them. Catch and shoots, 124 attempts, 40.3% from three. This is a guy who can just shoot the cover off the ball, and he has size. So, like, if we're just, like, narrowing in on, like, why Ben Shepherd, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
NBA size, got bigger, can shoot threes. I do think he's grown as a playmaker a lot. Like, that was something we talked about. Yeah. It's like, he, and there's still, like, flaws to it. Like, I think he dribbles kind of high, like, his handle's high.
Doesn't got a lot of wiggle off of the bounce.
No, either. And he is like, this is like where I'm going to start to get like really nitpicky with him. He is one of the most upright players I've ever seen. Like, he plays with zero bend. Like, he is standing up straight, and like, he gets his shot blocked at the rim a lot just because, like, he doesn't get up well, because like, try jumping without any bend in your knees. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. Like, that is something he's got to clean up. He has low blocks because he plays very upright.
Nine blunks on the year.
Yeah, well. Low blunt guy. Ben Shepherd. But at the same time, he's really creative. He sees the floor well. And I think that defensively on ball, he's very good. Like, he does a very good job of containing guys and keeping people in front of him. He was one of the few people to hold Scottie Pippen Jr. to 10 points or below last season. Like, when he is like guarding the ball, he is determined and he stays in front of it. He generally knows where to be as far as rotations go. But he does guard better down than up. Like, he's still not super strong. And like, I don't know what his wingspan is, because like, he's one of those guys who looks like he's all legs. And like, maybe it's just because the shorts that he wears.
The shorts,
like,
yes. Thank you. I was going to mention that.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know if it's just because he's wearing shorts that I'm seeing much of his legs. But yeah, like, he looks like he's all legs. So I don't I'd be interested to know what the wingspan is on him. But at the end of the day, 6'6", guards the ball well, shoots the ball. Good decision maker. He's gotten better every single year. Great attitude, great work ethic. I'm in on Ben Shepherd. Like, he's 100% going to be on my next board. And he's like a guy that I feel like I've had more and more people ask me about. Like, I just see his name coming up more and more. Like, I think he's really on the rise right now.
Yeah. I think that he's a guy that can, when I was talking about the top 100, I think that he's a real threat to squeeze his way in there. 86th percentile overall on offense, 84th in the half court, 71st in transition, 91st in pick and roll ball handling situations, right?
Yeah,
really 76
pick and roll now.
Just if you want to look at any of his, you know, where he grades out in synergy offensively, like, you're going to have a hard time finding any area of his game that he's just like flat out bad at. Like, he can do a lot of great things offensively. You mentioned how he's continuously improved as a shooter. He's averaging 1.4 steals per game, something that he has continuously improved each and every year that he has been playing. 3.1 assists per game, that's a career high. He's only had one game without an assist out of 25 games. He's had 14 games with three or more assists, only four games without a steal. He's had 10 multi-steal games. And again, I mentioned the 9 blunks that he's had on the year. He's an aggressive attacker, albeit without any of the bend that you were talking about, or lean, whatever, you know, vocabulary that we want to use here.
Yeah.
He's a solid athlete. I think that he's more of a power guard athlete than he is, like, say, a bursty or speed one, which
1,000%.
It kind of limits, like, what a team is going to be able to do with him, right?
Yeah.
If he's operating within a catch and shoot capacity, I think that that's actually kind of cool. Like, look and see what Desmond Bane has done for himself. He's got a beautiful shot. You know, you touched on how he didn't come into Belmont with a great shooting potential. He has worked on it every year, and it's just such a beautiful shot. The passing, it's not going to, you know, bend the court, I would say, by any means, but serving as a connector, I think that he's more than capable. Yep. The interior scoring isn't that spectacular, you know, and I think that it has to do with, you know, the lack of bend in his knees that you were talking about. But
yeah,
very
good, like,
in a straight line.
Mid-range stuff is good. Yeah, like, it's like, I feel like that is where, like, a lot of, like, his inside of the arc stuff was the past couple seasons. And then, yeah, like, when he gets to the rim is where it's a little tougher.
Yeah, he's like when Gimli in Lord of the Rings says, you know, we dwarves aren't natural sprinters, but very, very dangerous at a short distance. Like, that's what kind of, that's kind of like what Ben Shepherd's at when I watch him on offense. And I just think that the defense, you talked about how he's grown in that area. I still think that that's going to be kind of the area of his game that holds him back, because he's more of a power guard than he is like a fleet of foot guard. And I think that that's going to hurt his scalability.
Yeah. I feel like that's like the conversations I've had with people who are more skeptical about him bring up the defense and are a little bit more worried about it than I am.
Yeah.
Because I do think that he moves well enough laterally. I just wonder, like, if he did get into his stance more. Like, is it, like, is it something that's that simple, or is it a more, because if it is like a foot, like a true foot speed issue, like, then it becomes more complex. Because right now at the mid-major level, like, he can kind of play guys off his chest a little bit, and like, there's like ways that he can compensate for it that are not going to be there at the next level. And like, you don't think he's probably guarding up the next level, right? Like, it's like, I don't see him as like, I see him as more of like a two than like a,
absolutely,
three, four type. So like, yeah. So I think like that, if, so if it is a foot speed issue, then like, it gets really troubling for him. But I, I think ultimately what he's going to have going for him still is like, the size is going to make it a little bit easier. I really think he knows how to play, and I think the shot's there. And I think, like, when we are talking about this range and we're talking about margins, so much of it is just like, who would you rather have around? Exactly. Because like, the talent margins are so thin that it's like, I'd rather have Ben Shepherd around than like most people I know in my life. You know what I mean? Like, off of one phone call this with him.
This took a quick turn.
No. I just mean like he seems like a guy that, like, if I were to be building a team from scratch and it's like, hey, who do you want to have like the 15th spot on your roster? Like, I would trust him because I know he's not gonna like be a distraction or be an idiot. Like, he's mature. And I think that's
fair.
Quite a bit early in his career. So like, I think he's gonna be around. Like, I don't know that he's ever like a guy that is a really key part of a great team or anything like that, but it wouldn't shock me if he's a guy that just like is always around the league and on teams, because I think he has something that he can reliably give you when he plays, which is the shooting.
Yep.
The fact that he's not tiny helps. And then like, yeah, he's just an adult.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And again, a player that I've grown to like more, the more that I watch him. But again, like, there's just so many players that give you that exact same thing. You know?
Yeah.
And it's really tough. But Maxwell, last guy that I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
Technically, he's my guy that I'm bringing into the conversation, but I think we're both very big fans of this guy. So I wanted to end it on a high note. Talking about Jalen Forbes, man, the green wave guy. He is so much fun. He's what, like 6'5"?
He's 6'5", and I saw him in person, and he looked like that dude is 6'5". Like, that guy is, I firmly believe him to be 6'5", and I believe him to be like a big plus wingspan guy too.
Yeah, and I would say he plays bigger than 6'5". You know, I think that helps Tulane out a lot. And just as a kind of spoiler alert here, wasn't in my top 60, is definitely going to be in my top 60 by our next big board rendition. So 94th percentile in the half court, 86th percentile in transition. This is just going to be a lot of really nice stats here. 97th percentile in cuts, 94th percentile off screens, 77th percentile as a pick and roll ball handler. He's in the 73rd on handoffs. He's in the 76th on catch and shoots, 95th in dribble jumpers, 74th percentile at the rim. He's got a 3.0 steals percentage. He's shooting 37% from deep. He's giving you 2 steals per game. He's only had 4 games out of 22 without a steal. And he has, let me see here, 11 blunks on the year and only 2 games with more than 2 turnovers on the year. So he takes very nice care of the ball. Maxwell, willing passer, nice shooter, decent athlete. He's actually pretty good at seeking like 4-point plays. That's something that stood out on the film to me, and I kind of love that about him. Moves well without the ball. He can shoot off of movement, so he's not just one of these like stationary shooters. I like that about him a lot. He hustles. He can play the passing lanes. His on-ball is a little bit rough. His consistency on closeouts could be a little bit better. But he's strong. He's not afraid to body up somebody. Again, plays hard, crashes the glass. And I think that once he understands like how to properly position himself and like help and denial stances on the ball, it'll greatly improve his defense. But by and large, man, just an absolute flamethrower out there on the court, man. I love me some Jalen Forbes.
Yeah. So I actually, this is an odd anecdote. So Jalen Forbes is like really consistent. I think is like one thing that's important to mention just at the top with him. So he has 1 game on the year with less than 10 points. Love to see that. But this is a shooter too. So like, he's taken on a little bit bigger of a role. every single year for Tulane. And now over the last three seasons, he is taking 6.6, 6.7, and 7.3 threes per game, 36.8%, 38.7%, 37.3%. And he's taking a lot of like long ones and tough ones. So
yep.
It's not like a crazy percentage, but at the same time, the volume is really high. The difficulty is high, and he can do it. It's not a guy where it's like, oh yeah, he was like 31% from three for 4 years. And now like all of a sudden he's 38%. And like, you have to make a decision about if you think that's real or not. Like it's pretty safe to say that whatever level he ends up playing at professionally, he will be able to shoot threes respectively at that level. So I actually got in on Jalen Forbes. Like, he was a guy I had my eye on. And I think Tulsa has like five guys where it's like these guys, like if things go right, they could have a top 100 case. Like, that's how it felt going into the year. Forbes has been the standout guy of that pack for me.
You mean for Tulane?
I'm sorry, for Tulane. What did I say?
Yeah, you said Tulsa, another team.
Oh, I was looking at I just saw Tulsa on like his, because that was the team that held him to under 10 points.
I was gonna say they did.
That's
play,
why yes. I said that. Yeah. So, gotcha. I got in on Forbes as like a top 100 guy after watching him play in person against George Mason when he had one of his worst games of the season.
Mm,
and like, okay. I love when I watch a guy's bad game and I'm like, I still like what you're doing out there, man. So he had a brutal first half. Couldn't get the shot to go. He was 4 for 16 from the field and he scored 12 points. But he really started to compensate for the fact that that shot wasn't falling and he was attacking more. He had two steals, he had two blocks, and he was like, I know people like people don't like when you talk about body language. Like, I feel like people get like really like mad about it. Like, I feel like there's some people that like think it's like a life or death thing. And there are other people that are like, you're being a loser if you talk about body language or whatever. But
come
like,
on,
he
man.
Was,
talk
but
basketball.
He, yeah, but it felt like he was like the emotional leader of that Tulane team. Like, they were having a rough game against George Mason. And he was the one guy who felt like, I'm not quitting. Like, he was the guy who just felt like, no, we're staying in this game. And I think that's like a really important thing is I just love the mentality that he plays with. So I think ultimately you're looking at a guy who is a real deal 6'5", physically looks good, like good body in a good place there, gets a ton of steals, knows how to play defense, knows how to shoot. He can
just
like
moves like a guy too, you know?
Yeah, he does. I'd be interested to see like how he handles the scaled back role. Cause like there are games where it feels like he does force the shot a little bit.
Sure.
And like he'll take some like tough ones early in the clock, and I just want to know, like, is that something that you do because you're the best player, or is that something you do because you're like, this is a good shot? Like, what is it? It's hard to
keep
know.
The defense guessing, you know, on like when they really need to like hone in on you, you know?
Yeah. So that's like a tricky thing for me. But I really like Jalen Forbes. Like, I feel like he's going to be in that mix. He's probably going to be a guy where it comes down to like, how do you do with the post-college events? He's in his fourth year. So like, I think he's Portsmouth eligible and all that jazz. But I'm intrigued. I think he's physically in a good spot, can really shoot, knows how to defend, good length.
Do you think that there's a path for him to wind up in your top 60 by the end of the year?
I do. I think it would probably require Tulane like doing some things. I mean, they're 15-7. But if they could like, I don't know, like if they like really made some noise in the AAC tournament, or like, do they have a Houston game left on the calendar? Like, if he, yeah, they do. Like, if he has like if they like upset Houston, or if he has a big performance against Houston, or like
UCF, or
like if he can like really put the team on his back and like just continue to make noise, I'd be interested. I feel like the other thing that's going to have to come along is just like the inside the arc scoring is going to have to get a little bit better. And like, he's not bad there, but just like, if he was shooting above 42% from the field, I'd feel better about it. And like, he's never been great inside the arc. Like, he has one season above 50% on twos. And that was his freshman year and was on less than one shot a game. Like, if I could feel a little bit better about like, what do you do when you're chased off the line, then I'd probably be more into him as opposed to just like, hey, you just kind of stand there and shoot. Like, that's what his next level role looks like right now.
I think that is totally fair, man. Just a guy that like I'm falling in love with the more that I watch him. I love this film. But Maxwell, that's gonna bring our list of names up, and I'm gonna kind of throw an audible at you real quick.
Okay, let's do it.
We got a little bit of time. This is a little bit shorter than how we normally go. So we got a group project coming up. Everyone kind of knows what our group projects are here at No Ceilings. I've done some adjustments on my big board. I don't know if you have as well, but I'm kind of curious to see if you got maybe someone that you want to talk about taking a jump on your board.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I got two names that I want to discuss.
Yeah, so my first one is kind of like a boring one, because I think it's a guy who's taking that jump for a lot of people. It's Jordan Hawkins. Like,
okay,
I'm just convinced he's a pro. Like, I'm just convinced he's going to be around in the NBA for a long time and, like, in a pretty meaningful role. Like, again, one of those guys where it's like, man, that 2-point percentage is a little frustrating. And I wish he was more consistent as a passer off the ball. But I just think when you shoot like that and you play the kind of defense that he does, like, he's going to play. He's going to play. Yeah.
I have him at 33, and I just have a hard time.
I had him like 40 last time around because I was like, I like him. Like, I got to have him top 40. So, like, he was 40 because I was like, well, I've got to have him here because I kind of believe in him enough. But now I'm I think he's going to, like, be a really good player.
Where do you have him in relation to Tre'Quavion Smith right now?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I had Turk quite a bit higher. I had Turk, like, 22. And I...
Okay.
I need to watch Turk at 20. More of, like... I feel like I have not watched an NC State game in a while. Because I was going to watch the one where he got hurt, and then I didn't. Okay. So, yeah, I need to watch some of his recent tape before I, like, have a final answer on that. I've liked Turk this year a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I know the field goal percentage is still rough. I do buy the shot. I think the passing has come along considerably. I really like what he's doing defensively, and I think he's, like, I think he can do a lot more with the ball in his hands than Jordan Hawkins, but I have way more questions about, like, if he can play in a playoff series than I do about Jordan Hawkins.
Okay, that's fair. So I got two names that I want to bring up. Do you got one more, or do you just want to do one?
Will you do one, and then I'll
find one. Okay, yeah, that's fair. So first one, I'll keep it boring as well, but it's not boring if you know, like, where I have him in relation to somebody else. So Jairus Walker finally made top five for me. He's been scary good. Like, he might not be done climbing. And recently I just put him above Cam Whitmore, which really hurts my heart, but it's just, they both are probably going to play similar roles on an NBA team. And right now I'm just, like, far more confident in Jairus Walker's ability to contribute at a high level than Cam's right now. Not shutting the door on Cam at all, but just, like, at this point in time, Jairus is now at five on my board, making his debut in the top five. And it's going to be hard to see him falling out at this point moving forward.
Yeah. And, like, I know you mentioned Jairus, but, like, the thing about Cam is, like, I feel like he's looking better athletically. And then, like, it's like, ooh, I'm starting to, like, really buy the shot again. And then he'll have, like, ugly misses. And, like,
yes,
we've now had two games in the last few weeks where he switched onto a quicker guard and gets, like, burned during crunch time. Like, we had, I think, one against Providence. We had another one too. Like, there's been, like, two of those in, like, recent games where it's just like, oh, you just got, like, demolished by a quick guard right at the end of the game. So, like, I don't know. Cam's just scaring me a little bit. I think I like upside better still, but, like, Jairus has been awesome.
Like, he's been unreal, man.
He's like, I'm deciding
how high I'm coming around
the expanding big board, because he might be, I don't know if I can get him to five, but I think I can get him to six.
I had him at, I want to say, like, eight or nine at one point. And now that his like I said, his shot's getting there, the playmate, like, Houston is starting to trust
him. They're letting him make plays, which is
letting him phenomenal. Be IMG Jairus Walker. And it's just like, oh goodness, like, this is scary. And he's just, like, a mountain of a player. He's just ginormous. Like, the thing about Whitmore is, it's like, he's powerful, he's explosive, but he's undersized. Whereas Walker is powerful and explosive, and he might be taller than what he's listed at right now.
Yeah. And we know he's got, like, a 7'2 wingspan or whatever. So it's like, you can get away with that wingspan, like, and then some. Like, that's not going to hold him back.
He's like the Braun Strowman of college basketball
right now. They should do that. Like, when he does, like, that steal he had in the UCF game, where, like, he knocks it away, they should, like, play the train sound effect when he goes down the court, like they do for Braun Strowman.
When he's running around the outside of the ring.
So, okay. So I've got mine. And this is a guy who wrote a column about how I'm not giving up on them, and then I proceeded to give up on them.
Back hard.
It's Derek Lively.
Okay, yeah.
So he's figuring some things out, and the biggest place he's figuring them out is on the glass. So I'm spoiling part of my quick hits from a column this week. He is still like really inassertive offensively. But he's getting better, and like the Tyrese Proctor like pick and roll pairing is like working, and like he knows where to go in the pick and rolls. Like, he gives the guard space, he knows how to go behind his man, he obviously gets up high and far, and he has a huge catch radius. Like, all that stuff is good. But there's two things that have really set out. The first is the passing, which I'm just gonna touch on quick because it's not as exciting. He plays a very low usage role, but over the last 5 games, he has 1 turnover and 6 assists. Frankly, doesn't make mistakes in his very limited role, which is good. Yeah. And I've always thought, like, he knows what he's doing as a passer. The rebounding has been big. Oof. So in 21 minutes per game over the last 5 games, he's averaging 8.4 rebounds per game, which is just like, I am smiling from ear to ear as I say this out loud, because this is a dude averaging like 4 rebounds per game, and it's like, buddy, how do you have like a 13 rebounding percentage? Like, you've got like an athletic point guard rebounding percentage. Just
yep.
An athletic 7 foot tall guy. It just makes me so happy. And he's averaging 4 offensive rebounds per game. Mm-hmm. Like, he is just generating extra possessions for Duke, and he's doing this in 21 minutes per game. So like, yep. It's not like he's slacking on the defensive glass. He's still taking care of business over there. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing over there, but he is providing just a massive surplus of value on the offensive glass now these last couple weeks. And I don't know, like, the rim protection has been fantastic. Block percentage is up to 14.
Yes.
Like, I always like the rim protection, but like, it is really kicking into high gear. Like, I'm back to the point of like where I was at the start of the year, where it's like, well, you can't take him out of the first round. He's so big and athletic. And now it's like, he's so big, he's so athletic, he really knows how to protect the rim, and he's like playing with fire now. And I don't know if that was like him realizing like, oh, like, people are talking about me like I might go back to school. Like, I don't know if that's what it was, but he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, and he has been awesome. His performance against UNC was like one of my favorite prospect games of the season. And I think he scored like 4 points. Like, he did not score much. He 4 points. Like, he did not score much in that game, but it was like, that was a Derek Lively game. And he scored
13 rebounds, like 8 blocks. He had, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s, you know, stat keeper at the game for him to help tally up some blocks. And the interview was better because he just like cut a wrestling promo at the end, just looking like dead into the camera and talking about his teammates, like, more than himself. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved the interview, but he was like dead eye stare into the camera whenever he was cutting his interview. Last guy I want to talk about, I have a third, but, you know, we'll keep it there.
Yeah, it's sneaking in. It's fine.
Okay, yeah, so I'll sneak both of these guys in. So Jet Howard made his top 10 debut. He is now player number 9, just left GG Jackson, who, by the way, just the interview was such a, or the little IG live that he did in the locker room was not a good look.
Yeah, so let's talk about it real quick.
Okay,
So I put myself in his shoes, and I was like, I get it. Like, so if you haven't seen it, GG Jackson, after their, who was it that they lost to? Arkansas?
Yeah.
He did like an Instagram live where he was kind of, you know, complaining about his role, and saying like they don't drop plays up for him in crunch time, and like, he did the whole thing where he's like, well, it's not supposed to be like, let's give me the ball all the time, but isn't that kind of what it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
And like, he was like, letting, you know, responding to comments, taking shots at his teammates and not really coming to their defense. And like, it's a bad look. It's a bad look. And, you know, where I have a hard time with it is like, if I was that same age, I would probably be even less mature than he was, like, knowing myself at that same age. So it's like, I don't want to like kill him for it, cause like, I know what I was like at that age. Like, but at the same time, a lot of these kids are so polished and so much more mature than most kids their age because of what they've dealt with for so long that it's like, yeah, I don't think GG Jackson's a bad guy. Like, I don't,
he's a high schooler still.
Yeah. Like I don't fault GG Jackson as a person. Like, I have zero judgment toward him because, like I said, like, GG's probably way more mature than I was that same age. Like, I'm not even doubting that. But at the same time, if you're comparing him relative to his peers and you're seeing somebody who hasn't really made in-season improvements as a passer, the way that somebody like a Bryce Sensabaugh has, or like you look at like what Grady Dick has done as a defender, or like just some of the, or like how like Jairus Walker's just gotten like better at everything. Like there's all these guys that have just like made strides throughout the year, and you haven't seen that from GG. And then you see this and it's like, okay, well, all these other kids are already really mature. Like it's a relative to their peers thing with GG. And I think that's where it, like, that's where you have to think about it. It's like, these guys are ultimately going to have these guys. When I say these guys, I mean like front offices are ultimately going to have to draft somebody and pay them millions of dollars and count on them to be professional and be accountable. And there are a lot of other people that can do that, that are his same age, which like, and it's tough. Cause again, like I couldn't do that. So I can't, I have no personal ill will or judgment toward him. But I do think it's going to hurt his perception a little bit, whether that's fair or not. You can, you know, make your own decision about that, but
we can probably agree though, that not doing it would be better for him right now than what he had done. Right?
100%. So, yeah.
And that has nothing to do, by the way, with having Jet Howard at number 9. It wasn't just based off of the GGIG going on there. Jet has been on an absolute heater. We're recording this on the day to where he just had a heck of a performance against Ohio State in the battle of freshmen between he and Bryce Sensabaugh. Look, you know, Albert has been a big Jet guy. He said he's a top 5 guy. I don't think I can get there on him yet, but he's top 10, and I was not a guy that I was expecting to be at this point. But I mean, just another guy who plays bigger than what he's listed at 6'7". Like how is he not like 6'8", 6'9", just when you watch him play? Just great movement shooter, great ball handler. Needs to, you know, rebound and get a little better on the defensive end. But overall, like at his size, his position, and the shooting stroke that he has, you know, he just moves so well with the ball. And then Jalen Huschifino took a jump for me. I believe I had him at like 15, 16. He is now at 11. Woo! So I'm Corey, I'm with Let's you, bro. Go. Rucker, I think, is in that camp as well. But yeah, I have him at 11 over names.
He's
like,
going on the expanding big board this week too. So
okay, I can't wait to see where you got
spoiler alert right there. But yeah, I've been predisposed to Jalen Huschifino fandom for a while, but I just love what I'm seeing, man.
It's hard to not, you know. So those are the names that I wanted to drop here before, you know, we talk about who we're going to be writing about this week and you know, wrap up the show.
Yeah. So your column is going to be out like either like by the time people are listening to this or shortly after. So what have you got cooking up for NoCeilingsNBA.com this week?
Yeah, so talking about Jalen Huschifino, I wrote about his teammate, Trayce Jackson Davis, and wrote about why he is a first round prospect. Like if you look at his numbers versus what anybody else has done in college basketball history, like don't just run his entire Bartorvik fields and plug them all in there. Just have some fun with it, play around. That's what I did in the article. Like I ran one that has to do with like his BPM and his blocks percentage, just two fields. And there was like a list of 7 names and they're all NBA big men, you know? And so there's way more in there. Obviously I get into the film and talk about, you know, how he's being by and large used as a post-up guy. It's probably not going to be his role at the NBA level, but the way that he moves, his athleticism, the looks that we've seen him at on different areas of the floor, it's easy to envision him in a more modernized offense while also being just a heck of a weak side rim, you know, deterrent as well, and rebounder. He's grown as a playmaker, just so much about his game. So by the time you're listening to this, odds are that the article Talking Trayce is up at NoCeilingsNBA.com.
Yeah, awesome. I'm really looking forward to it because I love Trayce. And like you mentioned Bartorvik numbers, like the queries that he can come up on are so absurd. Just he's such a well-rounded player. Like he is obscenely well-rounded. I absolutely adore his game. I think he's going to stick. Like I'm all about Trayce Jackson Davis. I think, and it seems like he might be a steal. Like if team gets him in the second, like I feel like I've made this comp before, but I think there's a chance he's this year's Andrew Nembhard. Where like people are just overthinking it. Like they're being like, oh, he's old, he's not that interesting, and like whatever. And it's like, nah, he is. He's good. He's gonna be a player. So
I quote you in the article too, by the way, Maxwell.
Oh, awesome.
Look for your name.
We'll do. I'm excited for it. So so I'm cooking up. The writing is done. on like this part of the column, and I'm super excited for it. Prospect overview this week. The feature is going to be on Scoot Henderson and if he is a better prospect than Derrick Rose.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
So I went back. I watched like six or seven 2008 Memphis games. I watched like his best. I watched all the tournament games. So there's like four of those. And then I watched a couple of his best and worst. I think I watched like eight Memphis games.
What a fun team, dude. Memphis.
Dude, I texted the group chat. I was like, guys, I actually still believe in Chris Douglas Roberts. Like, CDR, still do.
Bring him back.
CDR should have been the man. But yeah, that whole squad was really interesting. The shorts in that era, man, the shorts were wild. We got to get back. We got to go back to the super baggy shorts. But yeah, super, super interesting team. Antonio Anderson was a dude that like I don't really remember that was super interesting, where he was like a really good passer and like right behind Derrick Rose in assist numbers for that team is like a 6'6 guy who like kind of could shoot a little bit. Another one of those guys where I'm like, how did Antonio Anderson not make it? But anyway, the feature is on Scoot Henderson, how he compares to Derrick Rose. As players at the same age, but then also like, what does that mean? Like, if I come away with the conclusion that like, yes, Scoot is better, what does that mean in today's
number one pick, bro? Let's go.
It's a lot about what the two of them look like next to each other, but it's also about projection and what that means in the modern NBA to be a point guard in today's league, a traditional point guard. So I'm really happy with it. I'm really excited to share it with everybody.
I'm excited to read it, dude. I mean, there's only one other person that I've even heard give an inkling that Scoot might actually end up having a shot at being number one, and that's, you know, Game Theory, Sam Fassini. And yeah, I was just like, at least there's somebody else that like looks at these two dudes like they're on the same tier. And I get like, there's like an economical, you know, benefit for drafting Victor too, that a lot of people are talking about now, where like just drafting Victor is going to make you so much money. It's going to be kind of similar to what Zion did. So I get that the smart money is on Victor, but you know, everyone knows, like, I still love Scoot. I still don't think that those two are like worlds apart in terms of like talent or outcome, anything like that.
Scoot's special, man. Like, he's really special. So that was like the biggest takeaway for me. It's just like, we got to appreciate this guy, like, while he's a prospect still, before he becomes.
Get rid of the conversation. Like, should Amon Thompson be taken third overall or Brandon? Like, nope, Scoot's the dude.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the Thompsons today. I don't know. I've been having, it's concerning to me that when they play the team with like traditional bigs on it, that they struggle. Like when they play, Young Dreamers.
Yeah.
Is the team.
Yeah. Young Dreamers. Yeah.
And they struggle in those games.
And he's not a big either. You know,
no,
he's a skinny big.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about the Thompsons, but we'll save that for another day. But let's plug your stuff. Where can people find you, Stephen?
Yeah, man. So written work, noceilingsnba.com. It's free 99, no tax. It's a flat rate. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that's where I'm most active, at Stephen G Hoops. And as always, keep following what we're doing here on the Draft Deeper show, and follow all the shows that we have on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. Maxwell, it was teased on Friday. We're not going to drop what the tease is because there's still work to be done.
Yeah,
but there is tremendous, tremendous big news coming down the pipe that I'm super stoked, pumped, jazz, excited about. Just keep following us. If you are, tell your friends about us. If you haven't, make your family members subscribe to the website, because this is the trending up, man.
Yeah.
Some big stuff.
Graphic. Yeah. The little emoji with the stock going up. That's what No Ceilings is doing right now. So, NoCeilingsNBA.com, subscribe to the Substack there, subscribe to this podcast feed, follow it on Apple, whatever they call it. But yeah, back in my day, it was always subscribe. follow me on Twitter at Boundboards, BAUM, then the word boards. Follow Nathan on Twitter at DraftDeeper. Yes. Don't forget him. He's the man, wouldn't be here without him. As always, thanks to our producer, Kevin Black, for putting this together. And we will see you all next time. Have a great night.
Much love, y'all.